Welcome to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld.
This episode is produced in cooperation with Independent Art Fair New York City. It will be part of the fair's OVR.
I'm Daniela, and this podcast is about my personal and also about a lot of other people's enthusiasm for art. Art can touch on all parts of life, and therefore we talk about all parts of life. I hope to get you on board and to tell you interesting stories you enjoy listening to. We're recording via the internet, so please excuse any glitches and sound quality. This is episode 88, recorded February 20, 2024. My guest for this special Independent Art Fair episode is Iraqi-American artist and painter Vian Sora. Vian was born and raised in Baghdad, and she is currently based in Louisville, Kentucky, since 2009. Vian's work has been presented in museum and gallery solo and group exhibitions in the US and internationally. And in 2025, she will have a traveling solo museum show at the Santa Barbara Museum of Art, the Speed Art Museum, and the Asia Society of Houston in Texas. Vian had her solo debut in New York in 2023 at David Nolan Gallery with the exhibition End of Hostilities. And she will present her work also with David Nolan at the Independence 2024 edition. That was a long introduction. Hi, Vian. Very nice to have you.
Hi, Daniela. Thanks for having me.
So, Vian, we let the audience know that we talked a little bit beforehand, so I'm already really in a very lively mood. And it was addressed in some of the talks you already gave, for example, at the Speed Art Museum, and I will put this link also in the show notes. But nevertheless, I think it is very, very important for your history, for your art, that you were born and raised in Iraq, in Baghdad, that bombing and violence and all of this was part of your youth experience, and that you just left Iraq when you were 29. But you grew up in a very academic family. So just give me a little bit of an impression how all of that came together in your life.
Well, first, Daniela, thanks for having me. And definitely it's kind of impossible to approach my work and my narrative without, you know, touching upon my background, which pretty much informed that part of my life and keeps lending itself as a backdrop for the work I do now. You know, I did grow up in Baghdad and to an Arab Kurdish family, which also is itself a kind of informed me from both sides, informed my life and enriched my life in great ways to have both cultures and both languages as a backdrop. But also it was a reason for persecution of my family. Then in the same time that during Iraqi-Iranian war, during Gulf War, during the last invasion in 2003, all these events absolutely informed the work, informed my life. However, in the same time, my family, especially when I was younger, they tried to compensate and make me feel safer, make me and my siblings feel safer through exposing us to art, to architecture. Those times there was some peace, or, you know, there was some normalcy. We were fed with beauty. We were fed with experiences that kind of informed us. It was just really very sublime, because there is life and death always on the same plate. So that kind of was the backdrop of my life. And in the same time, you know, my family worked with artists. My mother's family actually used to own an auction, one of the biggest auctions in Baghdad. And my dad operated an art gallery and an oriental rugs and antique store that was taken from him lately by the regime. That kind of environment really informed me and, you know, started creating those moments of the obsession with texture, with color, with different cultures that kind of fed my early work.
So was that already in Iraq the way to be an artist, like as a path? Was that already given to you? Was that something you thought like, yeah, I'm just going to be an artist no matter what?
Yeah, actually, my parents really supported me going into art academy, but I went against their wishes because I wanted, you know, computer science was the new thing then. And in 1993.
Yes.
Gosh, I feel so old right now.
Yes, but still, how is that connected, computer science and art? Because I have the feeling there is a connection, but I couldn't put my finger on it.
It's very complicated, and I don't know how to articulate it. So, because it's, I felt it then, you know, I had that obsession with art, images, music, and mathematics. Those were the things that was my main interest then. And also it was kind of, it's an ego thing when you're a younger girl and that in a society that, you know, in that year, there was only 4 girls admitted to the computer engineering department. And I was one of them. And then there was like 98. I remember some very weird number, 98 men, boys. I mean, like, you know, we were 18. So girls and boys.
And you're going to show them.
And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to be one of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was very interesting. And that also took place after some event that really reshaped our life as a family in Baghdad, because my father was abducted by the, you know, Saddam Hussein regime, and he was tortured and imprisoned. And for me, I thought, you know, for economic reasons as well, that it make more sense that I become a computer engineer versus living from my art. 4 years into that program and after graduating, well, the first thing I did even during college was painting. You know, I never stopped painting. I showed actually my first group exhibition in Baghdad. I was 19. And then I had my first solo exhibition in an art gallery in Baghdad immediately when I graduated in 2001. Oh, actually, my first job that I ditched after a few months because I decided to become a full-time artist was with Mercedes-Benz in Baghdad.
That's the German connection.
Yeah, that's my first German connection. And my boss then actually collected my first painting and, you know, connected me to tons of German later to become collectors and friends. And it was just a very interesting few years in my life. Yeah, that's how it started.
And you started also like more with figuration, which is a normal way. I mean, it's just like a lot of people start like that. And it became more and more abstract, but it's always also that your work is this fusion. There are still some figurative elements in that. And you have a very specific process also. How did that develop over the years while you were like migrating from country to country to country?
Well, the process of becoming, I started like many, many artists is, you know, I'm obsessed with art history and obsessed with the untold art history, if I could use that term, because there is an untold part, like many parts of it. And, you know, coming from a country that dates back to almost 7,000 years ago with the first writings, first cities and that kind of structure, you could not start immediately becoming an abstract artist. And again, I will get back to the, you know, I feel like it make it easy for viewers, for many people to call my work abstract because I consider it gestural work because it's also, the bodies are always there. But in the same time, the transition into that language didn't happen until 2003, actually 2004, because those were the most prolific and also most violent years in Iraq between 2003 and 6. And I left Iraq in 2006. And that's when my work started becoming something else. And I kept swinging back between figuration and abstract. And that was kind of the interest, the obsession of trying to give that kind of image. But also to answer your question about immigration, it was basically the path was to go from Iraq to Turkey. And, you know, I got married there. My husband is American. And that was the only place to get married as in Istanbul. And because also I was established a little bit there, I had shows in Istanbul before. And that's when I decided that I'm going to study printmaking with Master Süleyman Tekcan. And, you know, they call him Master Süleyman Tekcan because also he's a master printmaker. And he was working with Arabic calligraphy without understanding Arabic. So I was teaching him Arabic and he was teaching me amazing techniques, but also, you know, that was kind of an amazing time for me, stepping out of the situation in Iraq and starting my life there. But also then it had to be interrupted because of events that reshaped again our life because of the loss and kidnap of family members in Baghdad. So we had to move to Dubai end of 2006, 2007 and immigrated all our family there and then moved back to the US. So going back to the... So to answer why that process became... breaking the body, breaking the borders, dealing with the change, the inevitable change, the new landscapes. It became the new language, the new kind of atmosphere in the work. Abstract is the first phase of my work. It's when I start applying these massive swaths of color and pigmentation. But then the concept behind the work will lead to the obsession of painting. You know, this kind of almost OCD process of containing these shapes and formats to create the work that you see now.
So there are like these several layers. There is this part of more like uncontrolled. And then you talk about, you said the concept of the painting. When you talk about your paintings, it's very often about a certain landscape or a certain situation they refer to. How does that come together? Because I had very strongly the feeling that you carry those paintings or part of them inside your body.
Correct.
And your body kind of like spits them out, you know, like just has to bring it out. And then another factor comes into that. Is that more conceptual? Is that more thoughtful? How exactly do these things come together?
It's actually very complicated to even describe what I feel when I work because it's art. I mean, I'm sure every artist will say the same sentence. But for me, I mean, I feel like almost, I mean, what's the word? There are these sonics inside my body because also my body went through a lot of transformation, a lot of surgeries. I've been in brutal accidents and, you know, not to overshare, but I also had like organs taken out of me.
Yes.
And some procedures. So, that became, it's kind of waking up from surgeries like this, it became almost like a, I don't know, it is a sublime experience itself to also make it through life, knowing that your body changed so much and transformed. You cannot avoid or prevent that from going into the work. But also, I mean, I consider this body of work that I'm working on now, and especially for independent, it's like a, it's biomimicry. It's an imitation of living, of what the environment is going through, you know, because we're all part of this one big world, obviously. And no matter how important we think we are, we're, you know, we're going to die and disintegrate and whatever way we're going to be buried or not. That cycle is never going to stop. And that cycle is universal. And, you know, it's kind of, it happened and it will happen again for millions, if not billions of years.
Absolutely. But is your experience of death and pain, is that kind of like the reason why the paintings are so full of life?
They are because I'm very, you know, it's, you know, kind of cheesy to say that, but I do have that lust for life in me is that when you, it's very difficult really to view my work on an image in a phone or a computer because it's just a, you know, I mean, we're lucky to have these means right now to be able to, you know, have social media and have high resolution images. But my work is very interactive. When you see it in person, you feel the texture, you see the color in a different way. You feel that my interest is to keep viewers engaged. I mean, whether sometimes they might hate the work, and I know it's a strong word, but that also is a successful reaction. I mean, it's hate or love, but if you're not feeling anything towards, that means there was no tension, you know? So that's what I kind of experience right now, especially recently I've been in public. The work itself gonna continue. I feel like it's impossible for me to do just a pure abstract work or just a figurative work. Always the bodies are there within a landscape that is very kind of a realm that might not exist in real life, but it's actually, in my head, it's that natural selection that happened with nature in terms of the areas that stay and becomes kind of forms that lead into the subject of the painting. It's a reflection also of the beginning process, which is basically starting flat on the ground, especially with the large scale work that I do. But always simultaneously, while there is the large canvases, there are drawings happening in the background. And I draw before and after and during the work happening. And it kind of, there is this very interactive situation happening between me and the painting, because I feel that I'm receiving information from the painting after completion. And often these drawings have figures and, or they start from figures. So it's a complicated kind of process to talk about, to try to identify figures in a painting that a lot of viewers consider an abstract.
We're now aware that there is this physical, this bodily process, but how is the cognitive process? Because I heard you talking about your paintings referring to very specific, for example, to a specific landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you think about before, or does it happen during painting that you think, oh, I go in that direction?
Most of the time, I mean, 99% of the time, every painting start from a point of a reference of a landscape, of a subject, or mm-hmm. of something. Sometimes if I just want to, you know, let loose and be experimental, I start from nothing, but it never end up being the same, you know, like the same image that I had when I intended it. And actually, that's the fun part for me, because if it becomes exactly what you thought of it, it's become an illustration, and that doesn't interest me.
Exactly.
I mean, it's fine for some artists are actually great planners, and that's their technique, but mm-hmm. mine is more fluid, because I'm interested, like the figures and the gestural, you know, I mean, the gestures and the paintings there, everything is stripped of their identity. Everything is molding into an opposite role of what you're expecting. This is why it's kind of difficult. Sometimes I hear some curators or viewers use some term with my work, is that I don't know what I'm looking at, which is kind of...
Which is great.
It's great. It's because people want to find something, and I'm not interested in giving that. I mean, I use some very solid kind of biomorphic shapes and forms in the work, but also there is all these kind of fluidity happening. That painterly aspect is just more interesting for me. So I don't know if that really answered your question, but just to answer the question directly is, I'm interested in breaking those borders of the body and countries and landscapes that I'm thinking initially of. So in essence, I'm going to end up with a new landscape after that.
And you always have to dip into nothingness then, because if you want to break up borders, it's like you have to like allow the unknown to happen.
Yes, and unknown is beautiful and scary, and that's where it touch upon the sublime. And it's the brutal beauty. That's what I'm interested in, mm-hmm. because I also think it's a, I mean, I don't want to use that word, but it's a safe place for me. It's a place where I mean, it's the unexpected is happening on the canvas,
mm-hmm.
versus in real life, there was a lot of unexpected things happened to me. And, you know, I mean, it's life. You can't control it. These things going to happen.
No, you can't. But a lot of people think they can control it, or they want to control it no matter what, you know, and they go to
exactly.
to incredible length and depth to control, whereas control is just an illusion.
Yeah.
So as far as I understand, you work from like a very, very great openness. Also, I kind of like perceive fearlessness, and also the willingness to transform the pain or the hurt and all these things into something beautiful and sublime.
Yes, and it became a second nature to me, because I just feel like there is an endless well to dwell in and just find a lot of things to bring out. And the possibilities for me are endless with the work, because also I could get away with, I know certain people that think against non-representation, But for me, it's really the way of how the universe is working. At least that's my opinion and my experience, is that the unknown kind of is what leads the work. Even though when there is known, the work is going to end up in all these surprising areas. And there's something that many artists don't approach or speak about, is that the work fail also, you know? I mean, the work, sometimes you start a painting and you're super excited about it and you end up putting it behind a wall for 5 years and you can't look at it. It becomes your demon. And, you know, and sometimes you pull it and you turn it into something else, or, you know, a curator walks into your studio and that's the one painting they're attracted to. Mm-hmm. And those also are the works that kind of really inform what you think of as the successful work. You know, just even working in the last 5 years, where my career took a kind of a different turn and a wonderful blessed shift happened. And now I work from a place of deadlines, where, okay, you have all these deadlines and you have to create, and deadlines are wonderful, especially for people like me, because, you know, I have ADHD like many people and like many artists actually. So deadlines are a blessing, but also you start creating work for something.
Yes. How does that change? Would we be able to feel that, to see it in front of a work?
Well, I mean, the work became more consistent. And for me, I'm always interested in adventure. I'm not interested in giving you something you expect from me, because also that's how my character work. But we touched upon, you know, when I did an art residency in Berlin, mm-hmm. in 2021, right after COVID, and that kind of time, you know, I had some deadlines, but it was not like what's happening now, because it was right after COVID and, you know, most of the shows were canceled. And, you know, what I thought I have in 6 months was not happening for another year. So I felt the freedom of being there for 3 months, yeah. and probably created one of my best works there, because also I was not working for anything. I was working from the point of being in Berlin under that specific circumstances, because there was a different tone, even people, and, you know, that fear of others was translated in a different way.
Yeah, there was a very short time where one had the feeling like everything opened up and a lot is possible.
Exactly. But the works that happened, and I say happened, then it was very interesting. And, you know, I still have drawings and studies that I didn't finish intentionally from my time there. It was just, there was a different sense of lucidness and freedom, but also at the same time, limitation of space. Although I did do large scale works even there, because I mean, that's what I enjoy doing. I love the possibility of going into large spaces and occupying these spaces with the tension of my body as well. So that was a very fulfilling experience, because also there was a different kind of sense of time and a different sense of deadline to it.
Like your career took off, you have deadlines coming up, you're working for certain occasions, like for example, the upcoming Independent. And still you want to touch on this point where kind of like this river just flows into the painting. Mm-hmm. How do you create that under the tension of a deadline?
Also, it became a way of living for me, because it became these marks of excitement as well, because I think no matter how good you think you are as an artist and how long I've been doing this professionally for like 25 years, still there is something within you that, you know, you're a little bit nervous of how new viewers gonna portray your work, you know. I mean, and that nervousness is probably also, I mean, it's miswording it, it's excitement, it's I mean, that whole world of art fairs is kind of recent to me, but also, you know, I was so resisting the idea of putting a work in an art fair, but I also understand the importance of it, because if you're a collector, I mean, that's where you go see a lot of great art in one place, and or maybe some bad art, but that's where you go see as much as possible. So you're getting inundated with these images and ideas and color. And for me as an artist, what sometimes makes me nervous is that, you know, how, because my work is not a quick work. You can't just see it in 5 minutes. You can't just walk in and out of a booth and experience it. You really have to stand and be able to slow. It's a slow reveal process. I always mention that my work is, I'm not interested in immediately giving you an image. I'm interested in that tension that happened between you and a painting. And that might be a good or a bad experience, but if I'm able to get a reaction, then that painting is successful for me.
Yeah.
So all these things, and this is why the deadlines become a healthy thing, where you know there is an end goal, you know, that you have to like present on a whole different level.
I think you can turn anything, you know, an art fair, a deadline, anything, into this positive force for creation. You know, I mean, besides the whole commercial aspect of an art fair creates also a certain kind of new energy. Something unexpected might happen, you know, so it might be really exciting, or it might be also really bad. It might be really good. Different things. And you're going to have a solo presentation with David Nolan at the Independent. Yeah. So this is also giving you even a little bit more space to do your own thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's really fascinating and exciting for me, because it's also an art fair that is, and I know it's weird that we're talking about art fairs, but I mean, this is the purpose of it. It's an art fair that it, kind of there is this exclusiveness about, you know, how many people are showing. It's not, the last one I went to in New York, was it September last year? It was very special. The spaces and how it was curated, and there were some new art, there was old works, there were dead artists. So it was very rich, but it was presented in a more condensed space versus the Armory was happening at the same time. And it was just big and you get lost into it. So Independent kind of have that special thing about it. And I think the location, I mean, I believe it's going to be completely in different location this time. So I'm excited about that possibility as well, because of how we're going to create the booth and the works.
When doing a painting, is location, for example, if you know you show in a certain location, is that also an aspect that kind of like flows into the painting? Or is it when you're in the process of creating, it's really just what has to happen at that very moment?
To be quiet, transparent about this, I almost used to never create for a space. I create the work and the space for the work. With this one, you know, the gallery provided the layout, obviously, and actually gave me an option with the booth, and which is very nice of them. And, you know, I just thought that aligns with the measurements normally, the dimensions of my work. So I am actually creating for that booth, but also it is kind of, it's a dynamic booth that you could, I think, fit a lot of different things in it. So I am still going with some larger works, but also there are going to be smaller ones, which is going to create some good balance. Because also you want, like me and David spoke about this in depth, we like to create that kind of inclusiveness of when you want to be in the space with the works and you're not just looking at just a lot of work in one space. Yeah, we'll see how that's going to look.
So like a physical experience from the viewer is also, it's just going to happen because you have to confront the works.
Yes, ideal and immersive experience. But it's not like a three-dimensional all over. It is a booth, a traditional booth, white walls with paintings, but the work is immersive and the works that's going to be there are all in conversation. Yeah, I'm interested to see how it's going to look.
After all these centuries, you know, of painting existing, painting still can kind of through painting, I would say, not painting itself, through painting, still something always new comes into the world, all the time, all the time, all the time. On one hand, we say, oh, painting is dead, and there's been so much painting and this and this and this. On the other hand, again, an artist creates with her body and something very new and exciting and unexpected comes into the world. So do you think that's kind of like, that's going to last forever? As long as humanity exists, painting will exist?
I hope so. I think it's very difficult unless we are in a different kind of universe where people don't have hands and pigments or chalk or anything they could hold. I think that's going to be always one of the first physical and emotional and mental impressions. So I don't think painting is something that we could take away for humankind, because also it's how we articulated our thoughts the first time. I mean, cave painters were the first artists. And I mean, it's amazing to think that they, There are no possibilities, you know. And this is something I always confront myself with. Because also, you know, being in the commercial art world side is that you have to create consistent body of works and not just jump immediately to new things. And I tend to also experiment a lot with new things. And, you know, how to learn to slow myself down to create different images of consistent body of works is kind of challenging, but also it becomes a brain hustle, as I call it, because it's you and your brain. But I don't think painting will go anywhere. It's our life imprint, each person, each artist. And if you choose to become a full-time artist, which is not a choice, really, it's just something that you can't escape eventually if that's who you are. It's your way you express yourself. It's your body. It's that life imprint you hold inside of you that's going to, you know, with, you know, I hate to use the word craft, but it is, if you perfect your craft, that's going to be your identity. So you can't, it's not going to go anywhere. That's my opinion, at least.
Vian, that is the perfect ending just of this talk.
Thank you.
Other talks will follow, definitely, but just of that.
Love to. Thanks for having me and great questions. Thank you.
This was a special Voices on Art episode created in collaboration with Independent Art Fair New York. Listen to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the platform of your choice, on our website van-horn.net, and in the Independent OVR at independenthq.com. Follow Independent Art Fair on Instagram at independent_HQ and the podcast at Voices on Art and at van_horn_Düsseldorf. Thank you for listening to Voices on Art, the Van Horn Gallery podcast hosted by Daniela Steinfeld. Stay tuned and connect.